Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself. And with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has come up with a brand new drug. It's Richard Herring! Thank you, rap fans. Thank you. Welcome. I love to see you. Thanks for coming along. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was talking to Peter Poles the other day. You know Peter Poles. He's the host of The X Factor in Slovenia. We all know who he is. Might be Poles. He calls it Rahelastapa. So I'm not running out. No, I'm not running out. I'm not running out. That's going well. Well, look, it's been quite. I've got a moustache. Yeah, I think I should say that for the people in the room. I do know it's there. I'm doing just latterly for the last part of November. I've grown this today. I've had a beard for the rest of the month, but I've for the last week of November, I've shaved down to do November. I did November in 2020, November 2020. And then 4 weeks, 5 weeks later, found out I've got testicular cancer. So a bit worried about what's going to happen if I do it again. So if you don't make enough money, they punish you. So please do sponsor me. Check out November. But, you know, in the end, I raised quite a lot of money last time. And I was just raising money for myself. So it's quite worked out quite well. Quite nice. I said, I'll just keep it. They said, that's fine. So there's that. I've had quite a weekend. I did this is the end of November. We're recording this. If you haven't worked that out at home, it's going out at a different time. I did the Hay Winter Festival. And then I went to Manchester and recorded a secret TV show. I can't talk about that. That was last night. Then we had to drive back overnight. So I'd get back in time for this. It was almost like being successful. But they were trying to make me... I can't really talk too much about the show. They were trying to make me sneeze because... I've got a very loud sneeze, right, supposedly, and that. But then they said, can you film yourself sneezing? And I said, no, that's quite difficult. And I don't know when one's coming. And if you know it's coming, then you can't, you know, it goes away again, doesn't it? It's very much like an orgasm, isn't it, Dave? That's why if you know it's coming, it goes away again. And you can't predict it. It could happen at any time, just like an orgasm, isn't it? It's exactly like an orgasm. And so they gave me some pepper on the show to see. And then I thought I threw the pepper in my face. I thought, oh, I'd take like some snuff. And it was quite nice. I took a bit of light snuff. And so then I got a line of it and I snorted a line of pepper. And I have to tell you, showbiz people, you've been wasting your money and your time. It was fucking amazing. I would advise. Because it's a real spicy hit you get off. It get quite high. Plus, they give it out for free at restaurants. So this could save you a lot of money. So it's sort of like snuff. I have taken snuff. And I'm not that old, but I used to take snuff. So there was that. So it's been a fun busy weekend. I'm surprisingly not too knackered. Then my son has tonsillitis, which this morning he's been throwing up all night, had tonsillitis. And then I was researching the guest for this week's show at 10 o'clock this morning. And then they emailed to tell me that he couldn't make it. So because his child's ill. My child's fucking ill. I'm still here. No, it's fair enough. We'll have him on it another time. So I'm afraid if you're expecting Nick Mohammed, that he is not going to make it this time. But we have a reasonable replacement. I'm sure he's going to have something to say about the replacement. He has replaced once before, in fact, this guest. But we will talk about that again in a sec. He was having a wee. I want to just make sure he's got enough time to do his wee. Before and I did and this weekend I also completed 20 years of Warming Up, which is my blog. I've written every single day for 20 years and no one gives a fuck about it. Is there absolutely no one gives a fuck? And sometimes it's amazing. I've written a blog for every single day for 20 years. It's nearly 8,000 blogs. It's about 10-20 million words. It's more words than 100 Bibles together. But sometimes, you know, you do something remarkable that goes unremarked. And that is, if you can't be bothered to go back and read all of that, basically, I've managed to sum it up in 4 words. It's lost man gets found. That's basically it. So look, but thank you for everyone who listens to reads that blog. It did briefly do it as a podcast before deciding it was too much. But some people missed the podcast. There was a podcast. Remember the podcast of Warming Up, David? You remember it? Calculating. That was the robot voice was in it. That's where the popular character robot voice comes from. No? Okay, let's. We'll move on. My guest this week, got to make sure I get the right notes and introduced by the right thing. I've got notes for about 3 or 4 different acts in here. My guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on Celebrity Antiques Roadshow. I haven't seen that, but I'm amazed he was on it, and I can't wait to hear that. Will you please welcome the incredible Paul Chaffery, ladies and gentlemen? Hopefully, he's there. He's not weeing. He's still weeing. Here he is. He's coming. Paul Chaffery. There you go, Paul. How are you doing?
What an honour and a privilege it is to be back here.
It's lovely to have you back.
Well, yeah, last time did you explain that?
Yeah, well, last time we've had 2 people drop out of this on the day. In the 10 years of doing this, 2 people have dropped out on the day. Last one was 4 years ago. Al Murray dropped out again due to a family emergency. And you were in the theatre, right? You were here. That's what I remember. I wasn't sure you did it.
I was at home.
Were you? You were doing your laundry?
I think I was in between tour dates,
right.
And you booked me because Al pulled out very last minute.
Yeah.
And you've never actually booked me on this podcast.
I've never booked you on this podcast.
And then today, Nick Mohammed pulled out.
Yeah.
And you thought, is there another brown comedian you can book?
I didn't even notice. I don't see colour. I didn't even notice.
Look, Nick Mohammed.
I never.
Paul Chaudhry. You think, they're very different types of comedians. You're a racist, isn't it?
I think to replace a brown person with another brown person is the least racist thing.
Are you trying to hit quotas on this? Are you the booker of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here or some shit? I mean,
I said to Avalon, I had to email Avalon and said Nick Mohammed's dropped out. If there's anybody
brown,
if there's anybody, they suggested you, and I thought, but didn't we get him in last time?
Well, I replaced Al Murray then, so, you know.
He was not. I mean, he's a little bit brown.
Is he brown? Is he Indian, Al Murray?
Yeah, a little bit Indian.
It's a character, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
His real name's Al Muhammad.
So, you know, well, there's a lot of Nick Mohammed fans in tonight, so if you could just...
Is it? They're very disappointed.
If you could just try to be a bit more like him. Yeah. Because I can't think of a more different act.
Oh, hey, guys, I'm Nick Mohammed. Nice to see you all.
He went to Oxford and Cambridge, though, I think.
He went to Cambridge, yeah.
Cambridge. And I went to the States. I'm proper working class.
I know, yeah.
It's a very classist industry, this, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of isms in this industry that I think a lot of them are hopefully being broken down. Just tonight we're breaking down.
Well, yeah, you've really broken this... by booking another brand. I mean, it's... I don't know how many times we can talk about that. I think we've rinsed that joke
now. We may.
But I could sense the disappointment in the room because they haven't got Nick Mohammed, who's internationally acclaimed.
Yeah. Well, but you are... But, you know, he's a big actor, but you're doing a lot of acting as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just... I can't actually mention what I've just been filming, right. Can I?
That sounds exciting. But you've been in. I've heard what is backstage, and it's very exciting. You've been in. You were in Cruella.
Cruella with Emma Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Which I also legally I'm not allowed to talk about.
Are you not?
But we can. We could. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
Okay.
And if you get sued by Disney.
Yeah.
That's your fucking problem.
It is. It depends what you say about it. Did you have what were you playing? You were playing the restaurant, a restaurant owner.
Why would you say? Why?
It's what it says on IMDb. A restaurateur.
No, it doesn't say that.
It does.
It says professor.
It doesn't.
And you changed it to restaurant owner. Are you thinking of Nick Mohammed's not on the show? Nick Mohammed is the guy. He plays the restaurant guy. Nick Mohammed is the restaurant guy in it.
In Cruella?
No, I just... No, yeah. He was...
You might have just... Oh, fuck, I've got the wrong page. there's that. You're in a show called Devils.
I was in Devils, yeah.
And that was... I didn't... Well, tell us about Devils. What was it? Well, I want to hear about Celebrity Antics Roadshow, but let's talk about Devils.
In Devils, I was the restaurant owner.
Oh, yeah. Have you just got a restaurant that you let people film in it if they
just come to my restaurant?
Say, can I be in the film?
In Devils, I was a banker.
Right.
It was a Patrick Dempsey drama thriller for Sky, and I was a banker in it. It was about the banking crisis. So I did 10 episodes in season one, and then 3 in season 2.
Right.
So, but it's funnier if I just said restaurant owner. But yeah, I did that. I'm a thespian.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed you in Greg Davis's The Cleaner.
I was in The Cleaner with the first really episode with Helen and Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
I was married to Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And, I was playing the schoolboy in that one.
Yeah. You're very youthful looking.
Yeah, I'm very versatile.
You are.
Like, you know, Prince Andrew. I'm quite... Well, you know, I play different characters.
Okay. I was sort of surprised to realize. I mean, I should have realized. I've known you for a long time. You seem very youthful to me, and I kind of had you in my head. I had you bracketed in the 30s, maybe just hitting 40. But you're close.
Well, should we let them decide?
Yeah. How old do you think Paul Chowdhury is? There's a little bit of a clue. How many? 26.
It was 24. Nice. It was close.
Yeah.
It was close. It was close. 23, 24 next year.
Yeah, he's very young. He's a very young 48-year-old man. 48 years old.
Yeah. I've had a lot of work done.
Have you?
No, I haven't had any work done. But but looking at Madonna's pictures recently...
Yeah.
Have you seen her face?
I mean, I have. But
that is prime example of... You know when, like... I hope we can cut this out if it doesn't work.
Okay.
But people are judged by their appearance and they get away with being quite hot when they're young. Like,
yeah.
I've never got away with that shit. But when men or women are young and youthful, they get a different treatment.
Yeah.
And then as they get older, the looks tend to fade.
They can.
Well, they didn't get that on the podcast. I pointed at Richard.
I think they picked it up even in audio. I think that pointing was...
And that's the problem. And then she's, people are treating her differently as a 64-year-old woman, and she's had a lot of work done, and she's TikToking and twerking.
Yeah.
You don't really want to see a 64. And that's a prime example of treat everyone like a piece of shit, and then they won't have to make those adjustments.
Yes.
Would you get any work done?
No. I would sometimes have a moustache on my face. Just
that's not technically work. No. I've had a facelift in that case.
I think growing a beard's a great... You know, actually, shaving off the beard reminded me of why I have the beard, because it's a great way just to cover up most of your face, as you were doing. So,
well, you can make...
There's a lot of hanging fat under here that it...
Oh, thanks, man.
It hides, for me, it hides...
Oh, it's like a bollock, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's, you know... Bit insensitive, but yeah.
I wasn't saying your face looks like one of my bollocks, but it's what it does, it diverts attention away from the features that you aren't as comfortable with.
Sure.
So if you have a moustache, people won't look at other parts of your face, like you've got a massive nose or busted teeth or some shit. They look at the beard. It takes that attention away.
Yeah, well, yours definitely. I mean, it's a very fine beard. I mean, I remember before you had a beard.
Is it?
Yeah, I remember before you had a beard, but it's a very... The moustache is, you know, it's a curated moustache.
Yeah, this takes... This is, you know, proper Movember, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It takes a... I mean, a lot of audience members have got beards. This young lady in the front row. You see what I did there?
It's a good
trick, that.
It was good.
Although these days you wouldn't be able to get away with jokes.
You can't get away with that anymore.
She could technically have a beard, and we shouldn't laugh at that.
Yeah.
It's not acceptable to laugh at a woman with a beard anymore.
It isn't, so you've got to be careful.
Got to be very careful.
Tell us about... I can't imagine you on Celebrity Antiques Roadshow.
Why not?
I don't know. Well, partly just having sat down with you for 5 minutes here, the things that have come out of your mouth. I just can't see them editing around you very, very easily.
It was primetime BBC.
Yeah.
And I'm very primetime, very my tour show is called Family Friendly Comedian.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want
to... That's not enough just to call it that. Well, yeah. That's not enough to go, it's my show, it's called Family Friendly Comedian, and it's just full of all this sort of filth and disgusting stuff that isn't family friendly. In fact, that's sort of the worst thing you can do is to call it that.
Well, then families have attended and walked out.
Yeah. That was probably the drawback. But anyway, so how did it go? Who were you teamed up with, or who you were against on select? Who you against?
Al Murray.
Were you against Al Murray?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Al Murray, it's coincidentally Al Murray, who I was replacing.
Yeah. Nick Mohammed.
It was up against Al Murray, and I thought I was in trouble because he studied history at Oxford.
Yeah.
With you, didn't he?
Yeah, it was the year below me, actually.
Oh, it was the year below you, yeah. So he knows his history.
He really does.
It was a tough one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I should reveal who won that, because you go up against... The road trip is different to the road show. Okay. So the road trip, you get given an antique car, a classic car, and you drive around the country, and then you... buy stuff at, like, proper shithole. You know, like, these... You know the places that sell antiques? Yeah. And they are shithole places. and I turn up, and I'm trying to bargain with them, and then you negotiate, and then you have to sell them at this auction in another shithole with these old people there in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And they're like, what the fuck are they doing here, trying to buy this shit? I mean, I don't know what the lives these people lead.
Yeah.
And then you sell it... Whoever sells it for the most crack money... wins the episode.
Yeah. Did you win?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you beat Al. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, he should know, but he's so posh, he doesn't know. He knows how old something is, but he doesn't know what it's worth, probably.
Well, he comes from money.
Yeah.
I don't come from money.
No.
He's old money. I'm no money. So, you know... I know. I'm a hustler.
You learned to hustle.
I'm a hustler. You know, well, I grew up on the streets, as you know. So we had to. That was the survival. Was just to eat was a difficult thing in the 1980s.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that was funny.
And what's funny is the audience just not being quite able to decide whether they're allowed to laugh at that or not. That's why I was laughing.
Yeah, I grew up on the mean streets of Edgware.
Yeah. They are pretty mean streets. Yeah. You were in a house, though, right? It wasn't just literally on the street.
No, I was living on the street.
Wow, that was swing tough.
I was in the house in the evenings, but yeah. In the street. in the daytime.
Oh, dear. So tell us about the tour. What is in this family-friendly comedian show? Are you genuinely making any attempt to go mainstream?
Yeah. I talk about I want to become a mainstream entertainer.
Yeah.
Like Ant and Dec.
Yeah.
Not the one that drinks and drives, the other one who does cocaine and prostitutes. I want to be like that. I want to be like that one. So that sets up the show quite nicely. Or I want to be like Philip Schofield before he jumped the queue. I want to be like the old Philip, not the new one.
Yeah.
The straight Philip Schofield.
So before he came out.
Yeah.
And before he jumped the
family friendly one.
Yeah, the family friendly one.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. It's a good point, well made.
You know,
the lives of these people who are the family friendly entertainers,
and they're the most depraved bastards around. obviously, cut that out for the podcast.
I think that's fine. Well, you know, but showbiz has been full of people who are family friendly entertainers who've turned out to be.
We grew up in a different era.
We did, but yeah.
In the 1940s were a bit, very different time, but. Children's entertainers, as we knew them, we don't even have to repeat the names of John Leslie, notorious Blue Peter presenter,
yeah.
Rolf Harris.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I talk about in the show is how has Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and Jimmy Savile got a Netflix show before me. I'm doing something wrong.
You are.
How many people do I have to kill to get a Netflix series?
That's a good question.
Even Prince Andrew's on The Crown.
Yeah. It's true.
How have I not got a Netflix show?
It is true.
What do I have to do? did you do?
Well, I've got no. I can't get any Netflix. I've had to do.
And you've done some depraved things
in
your
life.
Some
terrible things. I'm not allowed on any of these. On any of these.
You have to start your own podcast.
I do my own stuff because they're
I'm still asking them to the gatekeepers to let me in.
Yeah, but you don't. You know, you don't need to. I mean, you're uncancelable. Cancelable.
That's easy for you to say.
It is. Because you know you're just performing live. If theatre said they didn't want you, I suppose the only. Is if you did something so bad that theatre said we won't book him, but you could still perform, right? You used to do podcasts.
Well, yeah, I used to, but now we live in an era where you could be the most cancelled human being on the planet,
yeah,
and they'll put you on the biggest platform on a reality show.
Yeah,
it's incredible the world. These commissioning editors, how spineless they are, who would let. Disgraced MPs who are still sitting MPs on the biggest platform in the country.
Yeah, I mean this has come up earlier in the series, but it's an interesting thing, and when you're doing shows on TV, and then you suddenly think, oh, is Matt Hancock going to be a guest on a show? You know, you don't know if you were doing the Jungle Show, and then you just turned up and Matt Hancock's there, and you didn't know he was going to be in.
I kicked the fuck out of that guy. What the fuck are you doing here, you cunt? What piece of shit booked this guy? I never got a call, but he got paid £400,000to do a show like that. £400,000. And he's, this is a guy who, he got caught trying to get fish fingers in a... shit on his fingers. I mean, the guy's a piece of shit.
But we want to see what he's like. We want to see if he's like... I don't give a fuck what these politicians are like. I just want to know if they're good politicians.
Yeah.
I don't want to hang out with these people. They're supposed to be running the country. Who cares? They don't care what I'm like backstage. They care what I'm like on the stage. Sure. We ain't going out for dinner afterwards. Me and this bearded woman ain't meeting up afterwards. We ain't swapping beard techniques. That's it. It's the stage, unless, of course, what you do backstage is so depraved that it should be cancelled. But no one really cares. Why do we want to know what he's like?
No, it's a good question. But I think that, you know, all the points you're making there are fantastic because, you know, you probably wouldn't. I mean, you have been on TV shows and there are, you know, you've been on Celebrity Antiques Roadshow, which is it's sort of a surprise. But you know, it is because of your act and what you do live, I think people might be cautious about booking you. But what you're doing, like, you know, you're doing a comedy show in which you will, you know, there are no holes barred really and you'll talk about any subject, but in a satirical way, I think. But what you're saying is all those other people who are family entertainers, you know, have done things in reality that aren't jokes in reality,
yeah.
And that they managed to PR their way through. It is very interesting. That.
It's interesting because if I was saying the stuff I say on stage at Parliament, there's an issue.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is on a comedy stage and the show is titled as a comedy show. So automatically the threat has been... this isn't real. They're jokes. What these fuckers are doing is real, and there are manifesting problems that result off the back of what they do. Their actions have consequences.
Sure.
Now, I don't think my actions on stage have serious consequences to the extent that the Conservative parties do.
No.
I might be going into realms here that are, you know, it's actually not funny, but if you can make it funny on stage for me to ridicule the hypocrisies that the country is being led in, then that's the issue I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, why am I seen as controversial on stage? I'm not really that controversial. I'm just the average Nick Mohammed.
We will definitely build this as still being Nick.
Yeah.
And we won't mention the issue and let's see how his career goes. We could take him down.
Well, if you actually advertise this as Nick Mohammed and put my face on the actual PR plug, and they probably wouldn't know the difference. But I think when I was, you know, when I started stand-up in the late 90s, at that point, you'd already been doing it for 35 years. there wasn't much diversity within the entertainment field. And there was no box ticking going on. So I was kind of ignored for a lot of things.
Yeah.
The fact was I was doing stand-up as I knew it, as a British, I'm Indian of heritage, but born in London. I'm a North London working-class man, boy then. And that was my experience. But all of a sudden, it's like, well, you're not. That's not what we need you on TV for. In fact, I couldn't even represent India because I don't know enough about it because I'm a Londoner.
Yeah.
But that was what the TV people see you as. You become, at that point, I realized that actually my race is quite a big factor now in the entertainment field.
Yeah.
And now there's diversity quotas. They have to have one person of an ethnic background, one woman, it's very diverse. It's strange. It's not seen as just on your own merits. You know, I'm doing. Right. I love audience. I like live audiences are where I thrive, but unfortunately, that's not how TV works.
No, but do you really miss that? Because I feel like all the stuff you're saying really is TV's going down this sort of sinkhole of not really being about comedy, whereas you're out on stage and performing in huge venues and selling out. Which big venue did you sell at? Wembley or the O2?
I did Wembley. Yeah, last tour. Yeah.
Yeah. So you sold out Wembley. I mean, that's, to me as a stand-up comedian, that's what people are doing TV in order to be able to sell out Wembley. If you can sell out Wembley, you don't need to do TV, do you?
Well, no, I mean, you know, TV, what is there to do on TV?
Exactly.
Unless you have a good vehicle.
Yeah.
Most of the vehicles, it's a dying format, unfortunately, and that's why they have to go to the extremes of booking disgusting MPs on these shows to essentially troll the public into watching the show.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're not even really hiding that fact. You know, if it's newsworthy, that he's paid for it. He's paid for his fee in the amount of publicity, and we're still talking about it.
Yeah, now we're talking
it's
about
over,
it.
And you know, we're still so they're getting exactly their money's worth out of that guy. And maybe it'll turn out that he has a showbiz career, or maybe it'll come out and we'll find out people were. I think a lot of people were voting for him just to piss off what they perceived as people who would be annoyed by him still being in.
Well, yeah. And that's what people think is if it, because people haven't been affected by the last few years.
Yeah.
Fortunately for those people, that's a good thing for them. But for the people who have been affected, it's not something we've lived through essentially a war we've lost more people in the last few years in this country than essentially a war.
Yeah.
So to be thinking, oh, this is really, I'm really pleased for to upset people who have lost loved ones and have their lives turned upside down. This is going to be a great thing to do. It's not something I would find funny or as a human being, forget on stage. We're doing jokes on stage about things. It's very different to people who have been heavily affected by what people's lives are still affected and they'll never be the same, mine included. So sure. I find it quite offensive, in fact. And comedy doesn't offend me, but things like that I find abhorrent.
Well, you know, people don't... I mean, that kind of person who just thinks, oh, let's try and piss off people we don't like.
Yeah.
And they're not, and you know, I'm not the kind of people who go to the World Cup dressed as in Crusader costumes when it's in the Middle East. I mean, if they were making some point about human rights in the Middle East, that might be something, but they're not. They just don't even realise that that's an offensive thing to do.
Yeah, and then commenting on their regime. And then going out there and taking the money. If you're going to comment on the regime, all right, you've got to follow it through. You can't just say, oh, it's terrible. Like, and then you're sitting out there commentating and taking the money. Obviously, you had you've had conversations about this before, but, you know, people have said when we hosted the World Cup, homosexuality was illegal at the time. But it was the 60s. It was a very different time and things have moved on. But how do you just don't go.
Yeah.
If this was some kind of homophobic, racist, sexist podcast, I wouldn't think, you know what, I'm going to let that go. And
sure.
I'm going to sit there with Richard Herring and just talk to him and kind of put that in the back of my mind. I wouldn't be able to sit here. But then,
what if I gave you £10 million a year to come on the podcast?
I'd sit here. And, but you wouldn't give me £10 to be on this podcast. This is the irony of... But, no, you know, playing in an arena like this is very rare to sell out arenas.
It's incredible. It's an incredible thing.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'll ask you an emergency question. Well, let's go away from this, although very valid on what you're saying and, you know, people profiting. I mean, what I would say is I agree with you. I feel like it was a war situation in every terms. COVID was a war situation. We were all going through, the country was going through something together. If it was World War II, there wouldn't be people going, oh, you know, I'm going to give my mates the arms contracts and I'm going to, we're going to boost this business. If it was World War II, no one would be trying to make a profit. Everyone would be just trying to get the country through those 5 years. This was 2 years. And we should have all just been coming together and going, right, we've all got to get through this together. Let's make sure the NHS are paid properly from now on. And let's make sure no one's making billions of pounds out of this.
Even if you take the money out of it, the investigations haven't taken place yet.
Yeah.
The inquiry hasn't taken place. You know, that's the vote, really, of when the inquiry takes place. Because, obviously, at the moment, it's a public opinion of what's happened. and that's how he's being judged and the party as a whole. But once the inquiry takes place, unless the inquiry is corrupt, we need to find out, rather than, hey guys, let's, you know, ITV, we've got a great idea. Let's get Nigel Farage on the show about eating in certain restaurants of ethnic. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
it's not a great example that, but.
But no, but it's become politics has become entertainment anyway, and that's why you end up with Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage. That's the popularity. It's all becomes part of the same thing.
Well,
and people
are
unable to distinguish between the two to an extent. I think that's true. So Matt Hancock going into the jungle is just that's funny. You know, isn't this funny? And people aren't connecting the dots and think. Well, a lot of people are, and a lot of people are very angry about it.
Well, they say politics is entertainment for ugly people.
Yeah. But he's come out. Some people find Matt Hancock sexy now.
Yeah, this is what I don't.
I want to see him do the tasks. I want to see him eat monkey testicles.
I want to see a monkey eat his testicles. That's when I'd tune into that piece of shit. Live on TV, I'd vote for the fucking monkey. And apparently today we can't call monkeypox anymore.
Right.
Because it's offensive.
Yeah.
Monkeys have complained that this is where we are now in the world. But yet, that's not, he's not offensive, you know, to ITV. But calling monkeypox is now offensive.
Yeah. I was thinking, it is interesting. If I turned up at the TV show I was doing yesterday and they said, and the other contestant is Matt Hancock, what would, if you didn't know that in advance, which sometimes you don't, What would you do? Because I wouldn't want to do a TV show. I've been on a TV show with Nigel Farage, but not at the same time.
Right.
And even that, I found I'm finding this extremely awkward that I'm in a green room with Nigel Farage. But actually, to be in a comedy show with someone who you don't think belongs in a comedy show, that's a difficult decision to make. I mean, I was offered I'm sure you were as well. I was offered to be on the Katie Hopkins show
she would never talk to me.
Maybe there was a reason for that, but I didn't, and they were throwing a lot of money around to people to do that show, and I think most people said no, and I certainly said no.
Yeah, them guys never really spoke to me
because
I would have I tend to give it back, and they're not really comfortable with, because you're a middle class white man.
I sure am.
And you'd feel uncomfortable in that situation and almost surrender to their bullshit. But I come from the streets, and
I know.
But see, the Nigel Farage thing is interesting because at that time, it's almost that the people who voted for Hancock are the same people who voted Brexit. It's the same type who can get duped into almost believing the bullshit.
Yeah.
And Nigel Farage at the time, David Cameron wouldn't speak about immigration or anything because they were scared to be considered racists. So Nigel Farage is going all out talking about immigration policies, etc. And then the wrong people then voted because the other people don't want to talk about or address it. But now it's kind of gone the other way, isn't it? Where now the Labour, Conservative especially, are talking about to the extent where it's immigration has become the taboo subject, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, Labour seem to be sort of saying the same things as the Tories about it, which is, I think, is weird. So they're all pussyfooting around, terrified of pissing off.
But they weren't
the racists. I think which is sort of
Well, they're almost even. It sounds racist now, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
About the Suella Braverman and Priti Patel. Even the rhetoric from the Conservative Party does sound racist.
Yeah.
But do you put a brown face forward to say immigration? It's a difficult subject. I'm not a politician, and I don't know why I have to say that. It's obvious I'm not a politician. But when you do get a Farage coming forward, then you will get the backing.
Yeah.
And then David Cameron fucked up big time and just left.
Yeah, I think we can say that for certain.
I might have lost people in the audience now by...
Well, you're in a new sort of. I saw you talking to Christian Guru Murphy, and he was sort of, you were very serious in that chat as well with them. He was quite surprised about, though, after having talking to you, he did start calling conservatives cunts and stuff. So I think you may have had some effects on him.
I taught him well.
It is.
Krishna Guru Murthy has been at Channel 4 News since for the last 25 years.
I think your comedy's always, you know, there's always been this edge to it, and there's always been this political element to it, but it's so knockabout and silly and rude and offensive that I think it's maybe surprising, you know, it shouldn't be surprising, but maybe people might be surprised to hear you talking sort of quite seriously about subjects.
Well, I'm not left wing or right wing, and that's not where my comedy comes from, but where comedy now is that they want to know your political viewpoint. What I want to know from a comedian is he funny?
Yeah.
That's the main objective. Are you funny? I don't care. I'm not there for your... I'm not going to vote in any direction you tell me to vote in. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to be amused, as the audience is. So that's the most important part of comedy. But now it's TV commissioners want to know your political viewpoint to your comedy. Why? Why has that now become a thing? I don't have to agree with what you say. You may even say some of the most sexist, homophobic thing, whatever, but is it funny? But, you know, that's the point is, you're not going out there to be... the ironic take with comedy, the twists and turns, hopefully that's not what I'm putting across in my comedy. I'm not out there being sexist, homophobic, racist or anything. These are vehicles that you can use within a comedic world.
Yeah.
And you can use it to twist people around and, you know, turns of phrases, linguistics within... The scientific study of language is very important with stand-up.
Yeah, and I feel like it's good. It's good to be in a position as a comedian. And there are very good comedians who do take a very political stance. So it's not like nothing in comedy is it has to be this way. Mm. But I think if you're basically, you know, not nailing your colours to any particular mast and looking for the funny in both sides or every side or just this seeing what's ridiculous, that seems to be more what a comedian should be doing than saying. You have to think like me, or I'm going to joke about this, but you mustn't joke about this subject.
Exactly, like, you know, let's just take the first example, the woman with a beard.
Yeah.
For instance, now, somebody...
You know, you're really transphobic.
No, I wasn't transphobic. It was a point where I was being funny, and that was the whole point of that bit. But then when you get, you shouldn't do... That's not what we are. That if that's what you're reading, that's your problem.
Yeah.
I'm not here to offend. Offense, you're feeling it's not what we're doing up here.
No, well, I think in that particular case, if you took that way, you'd be digging for you'd be digging for offense rather because it wasn't in the intent. I don't think of what you're saying. So that's the key thing. But comedians, we're still able to, you know, you're still very much able to do whatever you want to do. You're joking about every subject under the sun, really, in your shows, and no one's stopping you, and the audience are enjoying it, and that's the test of it. As long as your audience is there and enjoying it, and paying to come back, it's a self-policing system.
Yeah, live comedy is where I think the best comedy is when it's live, and TV doesn't show that. You won't see. Real comedy on TV. What are stand-up shows are on TV these days?
Well, there isn't much, but then that's what people have to realise. You know, it is. But I think that's always been the case. TV was much more, you know, safe really in the old days, and then there'd be an occasional show that was a bit more risky. But it's nothing compared to going into a club and seeing what people are talking about.
Yeah.
So I guess if you've grown up looking at stuff that's on TV and then going to a comedy club. You might be astounded by some of the stuff that people talk about, but again, you don't have to go and see it. And you know, if enough people don't want to see it, it'll disappear. In the same way that the 70s sort of racist comedy fell out of fashion and nobody wanted to see it, the audience will decide what they want to see.
Well, there are comics now still being racist on stage
using the
words that you technically are illegal to use.
Yeah,
but they're using them on stage. Comics that are playing rooms like this, and that me and you both know.
Yeah.
But do I go and see it? No. You know, it's that. That's the. Can we go into this territory? should we discuss him?
We can do if we discuss anything you like. But you know, but I think people.
You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I think so. Yeah. Well, but yeah. I mean, there are people who definitely use those words, but where, but you know, in what? Not many people do now. And so the person I'm thinking you're thinking of talking about is doing it in a way I think that is he's the lowest of the low and fighting out against everything. So he's
life is kind of, but then it's people like that. See, it's blaming. It's almost a blame, isn't it? Like going back to the old joke, they're coming over and nicking our jobs.
Yeah.
Which can is used in certain other, like, what jobs are you talking about? But it's people like him who have that viewpoint. But then when it's done on a comedy stage, the question is it acceptable?
Yeah, I mean, it is, but then that's the question. We could say that about everyone's material.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you know. When he was cancelled, was that, you know, that it was a questionable decision by the Edinburgh Festival, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. You're talking about Jerry Sadovitz, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because then suddenly I thought, is it Andrew Lawrence? No, sorry, it's Jerry Sadovitz. I don't think the Edinburgh Fringe should be censoring anyone from saying something. I think the audience should decide what's going on.
But then do you book Roy Chubby Brown? Why has he been banned from everywhere?
I mean, I wouldn't book him if I think people still have the freedom of choice to, if it was my venue, I wouldn't book.
But he does this podcast on a regular basis.
I have people on here I don't agree with.
Well, thanks.
That's why you're here. And, I'm a deeply racist man.
I've known that for 25 years.
But I think we should be, you know, comedy should be talking about stuff and trying stuff out and should feel safe to do that.
Yeah, but
I think you're one of the most, you know, you're one of the in the noughties a lot of comedians were doing stuff like you're doing. I think you're still doing that stuff that a lot of comedians are now think, oh no, I better not go near that subject just in case. I'm not saying you do, I think you think you're thoughtful about why you're doing it and there's a reason you're doing it, but you've stayed true to that older version of yourself, I'd say, and that you still will do jokes about the subjects that some comedians wouldn't do jokes about.
Yeah, stand-up in its purest art, in its purest form. And I'm not a sellout, you know what I mean? So, but when I was doing, like, my first DVD, What's Happening White People, in 2012, even that phrase, which was funny at the time, was considered, we can't say that. You know, I was like, I was a younger British Asian guy just playing with race and playing with certain, and it was seen as controversial at the time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, a lot of people started doing that kind of comedy, and it became the norm almost. Because at that point, you know, a British Indian act hadn't done Live at the Apollo, and that was weird. At 2012, that hasn't happened
yet. Right, yeah, that is.
You know, that's literally 10 years ago, and I used to perform here for a week, a run, and stuff like that. So I found it strange that there wasn't as much diversity then. You know, we were just talking, Lenny Henry was the other.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's amazing how, when you do look back, how recent it is that things have started to change, you know, and I think, and it has started to change, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but even something like Taskmaster, look at me, you were in an early series of Taskmaster, and there used to be one woman in each series out of the five, and, you know, that for about four or five series, so even that was, you know, that's a pretty recent series, and it took them to, you know, 5 or 6 years ago to think, oh, should we maybe have, like, two women in each of, maybe we could have three women in a series, you know, so it's incredible. I mean, we were doing Time Jump Please 20 years ago, and I think we would sort of go, I mean, I remember having discussions about saying, there's a lot of white people in this show, should we have some diversity in the show, and we, you know, and then we'd feel quite pleased if we put somebody in who wasn't white, but if you look back at it, it's a very white show still. So we might have like an occasional guest. I think there's probably one episode where the major character is a black guy, but you know, we'd had an Asian guy come in as a character, and you kind of thought, oh well, you know, we've got an Asian guy in, and I look back and go, yeah, I mean, he had four lines, and he was, you know, and it's so, it's incredible. I think you're right to point it out, and it's incredible that in such recent history, things were so unequal. Yeah. But it's, you know, if people talk about comedy's about kind of creating conversation as much as anything. So any of these comedians and anyone, and I include the people I don't like who I think are doing stuff that I think is just racist. Yeah. They're at least, it's at least a conversation. You're at least throwing something in, and then people can make their decision. And I think overall, the tide of history is moving in the right direction, as much as there's a lot of it going swelling in different directions. Mm.
Slightly far, behind America.
Yeah.
But then alternative stand-up started slightly later in this country than in America. So.
Yeah. But did you start doing stuff? Did you perform in America quite early on? You say you came up through black clubs, right? In the UK. Did you do stuff in America as well, or was it all UK based?
I've done gigs out there.
Yeah.
Completely illegally.
Right.
because I don't have a green card, a work visa, so
this goes out into the world.
America.
Yeah, this goes out everywhere.
So I've done stuff in it. You know, I did The World Stands. I remember that show, The World Stands Up, which was broadcast on Comedy Central in America, and that was years ago. And then I just did spots out in America. And the American clubs pay, what, $30 or something? It was right. The pay out in America. Unless you're a big touring comedian or you're on TV shows out there, there's nothing to be earned in America. And so you've already got a... So maybe I'll go out there and tour... Do family friendly comedian out there. If this is going out in America, I'm going to come to America. And
I think you should. I think you
have you done America?
Should. No, I've not cracked the UK yet. I've been working hard here. I've been to Montreal a couple of times. I've never done anything in America. But I don't have any ambition to. I never really did have any ambition to go out there. I'd like to do well here and stay in my house and be around my family.
But you made a lot of money back in the day, innit?
No, I didn't, no.
Is it?
I mean, I make more money. I make more money now.
Is it?
Yeah, we didn't make anything in the 90s.
I remember coming to your house back in 2000.
Well, that was Time Gentlemen Please. I made a big load of money, but not by any other standards. I did quite well for 2 years writing Time Gentlemen Please.
I remember coming to your house and, I just kept on walking up the stairs. I walked up the stairs and you were like, we've got a gig.
Yeah.
And by the time I got down, we'd missed the gig. I remember we drove somewhere, some student gig somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I don't remember.
It was me, you and somebody else, and we drove there and I met you at your house and I was like, I couldn't believe the size of this place.
Well, yeah,
in Hammersmith as well. It wasn't in some shithole.
It was all right. It was Shepherd's Bush. It was a bit of a
It was near the Empire, wasn't it?
It's near there.
I remember seeing Amy Winehouse at the Empire just before she broke, got big, and I met her in a club. And then I come to your house, and I'm thinking, this is what comedy is.
Well, if that carried on, I do these TV shows so occasionally, like these, you go onto something and it's like a bit of hard work, but they pay you really well like this show I did this weekend. So it's a Channel 4 show and you do a couple of days filming for it and you get a few £1,000 for it.
Is it?
Yeah, but the people who do those shows all the time are on that kind of money. I'll do one a year. And think, that'll help me get through December or whatever. But they're on it they do five or six of those a week.
Mm.
And that's what I kind of find interesting about when you get into that treadmill of being on TV, you're working all the time and you're just making huge amounts of money if you're doing the right shows. And, but are you getting any time to enjoy the money?
Yeah.
You can't step off the treadmill for fear of not getting back on again.
So... That's exactly what I think when I watch Babe Station. Like how they're on every day, so they're on some big money. Massive jugs and
their limited lifespan, though. That's the thing.
You'd phone them up, though, innit? I've been on Babe Station.
Have you?
Mm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but
I mean, you've got a very good body under there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate.
I've seen some pictures of you with your shirt off.
Oh, thanks, man.
You work hard at that, keeping yourself looking good.
I sent you on Snapchat, innit?
You did, yeah. Let's ask you a stupid question. It's very interesting stuff, Paul,
Yeah. I mean, I could stay on this podcast for days.
You could.
If anyone else drops out.
We'll just keep you. If you could just turn up every Monday, and we'll just let you know.
Yeah. If you're on standby. Yeah, just, it's like being on standby at the clubs back in the day, remember?
It is. Well, they have, you know, but they do this.
Reserve act they used to have. Didn't turn up.
I was a reserve act for, like, well, during COVID. They might have asked you for this as well, but like Taskmaster, when they were filming Taskmaster, they would have you, they paid me, I think, £750 to just be ready to go in if anyone got COVID and just and sit in the chair and be there for the day. So I didn't have to go.
I think so I did that as well for, it's nice, isn't it? I think I was the standby for Catherine Ryan, because we're very similar.
Yeah. You are pretty similar. So, you know, that's the best way to make money is to become a standby that doesn't get used and they still pay you.
No, I think I was standby for, and then I was actually there was another female act in one of the seasons who got ill, and then she ended up just doing the show. She was in a double act.
Was it Katie Wicks?
Katie Wicks, Were you there that day?
No.
How'd you know that then?
Because I remember watching it. She wasn't well, so they replaced her with, didn't Catherine Ryan sit in one of them?
She sat in for one, and then the other episode, it was almost me.
Oh, really?
And then she turned up and I was like, this fucking... If you only something happened to you, I could have been your replacement. I could have been your Nick Mohammed.
You're not going around hurting people, are you, in order to get these jobs? I'll ask you some questions. This one,
Saddam Hussein used to have a double, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Mohammed.
Right. I'll ask you this question because you tour a lot. What's the worst experience you've ever had in a hotel? There must be a lot of bad hotels.
Oh, yeah.
What's the worst thing that's
happened? I actually filmed the hotels and put them online.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, I've walked in there. But this tour, there's so many. If you asked me this earlier, I would try and pick one.
Yeah.
One time I remember they went to the toilet and then I shut the lid and the whole toilet just exploded.
Oh, wow.
The porcelain just smashed.
Right.
And then there's just water all over the floor. And then you'd call went to reception that it's broken. They said, we'll sort it out after you check out.
Right.
So you've got to then, you know...
Work around the...
Just use the floor.
That's pretty bad. When you tour, what kind of level of hotels are you staying
at? One star.
Yeah? Could you keep it cheap on the...
Yeah, one
star. Even when you're selling out these big venues, you think I'm going to go...
Never be a sellout.
Right.
You sell out rooms, but don't be a sellout.
Okay.
So that's the trick, is it keeps you humble.
Yeah.
So you remain in... I've stayed in the biggest shitholes in England because you want to stay true to your craft. I'm like... it was that guy that Johnny Depp played in that... Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
I take that approach to my comedy.
I was going to say Willy Wonka. I was going to put my guess. I'm glad it wasn't. I'll only live in a massive chocolate factory. I find the massive chocolate factory in every town, and that's where I stay. And if there are no Oompa-Loompas, I'm out.
So I take the Hunter S. Thompson approach to, you know, I keep it real. I stay in places that are haunted. You know, shit stains on the bed sheets. Yeah. Generally...
I mean, that's after you've been in there, though, right? I'll keep it real by wiping my ass in the bed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're dirty places, hotels. They can't. They're going to be dirty anyway, even if they...
Filth.
Even if they make an effort to clean them, there's stuff that's happened. Every hotel room you've been in, something disgusting has happened.
Even when you call the local working individual to your room.
Yeah.
Because you can't use the other terms now. It was working person to your room, and then they see the room, they're like, fuck, they assign staying in. It's like the film Mona Lisa with Bob Hoskins and Kathy Tyson.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
I don't think the reference is too old for this.
It's a long way back. That's where you give away your age. Yeah. You know, you look young, and then suddenly referencing very old movies. Fans only? You do have fans. Yeah. Fans. Well, tell me about fans only. What is an OnlyFans?
OnlyFans. Yeah, I did.
Is it your own version, or is it?
Yeah, like Celebrity Cooking School. I did with Kerry Katona.
Yeah,
and she recommended OnlyFans, and she gets, it's like a recommendation, so you get, it's like a pyramid scheme.
Right.
So if she recommends the OnlyFans, you get, use her referral code.
Yeah.
She then gets a percentage or £50 voucher to use Amazon or something.
Okay.
And she recommended myself and Katie Price.
Yeah.
Because us three are very similar.
Yeah. Do you have to do everything together? Is it only,
yeah, yeah,
only available as a yeah, threesome?
Yeah. As a threesome.
Yeah.
So I was potentially thinking OnlyFans is the way forward now, where you can, you know, put pictures up and, you know.
Yeah. Is it working out for you?
Yeah. Yeah, you get, you know.
What can I get from?
Well, for £10.
Yeah.
It's a picture.
Yeah. And
for £20, I'll send
what
you.
What picture of what, though?
Just me.
Okay.
And me. And then £20, I'll, whatever you want in the video.
Yeah.
You know, I'll perform. And,
okay.
And then, what kind of stuff are you into?
I'm going to have a think about it. £20's pretty good. Can I get you to do anything? Can I get you to do anything for £20?
Well, there's a cost of living crisis.
There is.
And I wouldn't ever exploit that, by the way. Not like on This Morning when they did a Wheel of Fortune. And they, that was incredible. Like, there's somebody that,
it's a really good idea. I think we should do a Wheel of Fortune and then pay their gas bill for a month. It'd be really nice to exploit the general British public. That's hilarious.
Do you remember that?
I do.
And then he jumped the queue and then
yeah,
fucked.
It was a little, they've been a little bit out of touch in a difficult...
That's why I stay in shitholes.
Yeah. To stay in touch.
To stay in touch with the people.
Yeah.
When you go downstairs and you go to reception, you see the drunk, degenerate human beings that you think the most depraved dregs of society
yeah,
are in that hotel. And then you go and do the show in the evening and they're in the front row. That's why I do it. You know, I want to stay real.
I know. I've stayed in some... I used to stay in some very, very bad hotels. And you just come to the point where you're slightly afraid for your life, though, if you stay.
That's what I like. And I like taking the tour manager there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the tour manager is somebody who drives you and he says... And they're in the same hotel as me. Some people, they put them in the shitholes and then the act stays in the...
I don't think it's better for the tour manager if you stay in the shit. That's not going... Oh, yeah, Paul Chowdhury's great. He put me in a shit hotel, but he stayed there as well.
Yeah.
What they want is to go, I've toured with Richard Herring... He put me in a nice hotel with him. They don't think you're the great guy. They think I'm the great guy. It's the guy who goes to the nice hotel and puts the tour manager in the shithole. It's no different for the tour manager if he's in the shithole and you're in the shithole. He's still in the shithole.
Yep, we're sharing a room.
That really saves some money.
It saves a lot of money if you get
two people in one room, £15 a night. What's the lowest you've paid for £15 a night's the lowest I've paid for bed and breakfast?
Yes, £50 last week.
15.
Oh, £15?
Yeah.
What was that in 1932?
It was probably 14 years ago. And it was, there was nowhere else available. My car broke down and I had to stay in Lincoln, I think. And I got a room above a pub. And the door had recently been kicked in and not really been mended. And there was the bed was horrible and there was just noise shouting from other rooms all night long. I didn't even take the breakfast. I just got out as soon as...
Was this a hotel or an asylum?
I mean, it was like an asylum. But it was only £15 and I didn't get killed or raped.
It's worth it, then. Can you give me the details?
Yeah, I'll give you the details. And I stayed at probably the famous hotel in Swansea... That I didn't end up staying in because I managed to get a lift home, where the toilet was in the same room as the bed.
Oh.
I think that was about £20.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
That's worth it. It's,
I mean, it's all right if you're on your own to just have the toilet. You know, it's romantic if you go to a hotel and the bath's in the bedroom, but it's not so romantic if the toilet's in the... It was in, like, an alcove... But some it didn't have a door on it, that sort of thing.
But some hotels, the toilet is the bath.
Yeah.
So you can use it for both situations.
I mean, everything in any hotel room has been used as a toilet.
Yeah.
At some point. So the bath has, the kettle has definitely been used as a toilet. Definitely has. The Nespresso machine has been used as a toilet.
Well, I did a tour date recently and Johnny Rotten was in the same room, and
right.
I opened the kettle, and it was all bits of bits of tea bag in the kettle because I'm like, what's happened to the kettle? And they said, oh, Johnny Rotten was here yesterday. So he puts the tea bag in the kettle and boils the water.
Right. So he uses a teapot, uses the kettle as a teapot.
As a teapot. Because he's a sex, you know, like.
That's the kind of thing the Sex Pistols would
Yeah, and that's rock and roll when he's 70.
Yeah.
He was the Antichrist back then. And he'd used the F word in a mainstream interview. It was just controversial. Now it's tea bags in.
I mean, that is worse than the F word, from my opinion.
Yeah, I was very offended by that.
It's also like the tea's going to be horrible, isn't it? If you boil it with the tea.
Well, that's
it's got to be boiling water you put the tea bag in. You can't boil the water from cold.
No.
With the tea bag in it.
That's what he did.
Fucking idiot. I'd have had him on the show, but I'm not going to do
but
it.
But he does a Q&A thing now.
Right.
So it's not music. It's a little jump goes into, like, Marty Pello. Everyone's doing these tours now, aren't they? Where
right.
They're not actually doing their act. They're just talking about their careers.
Yeah.
Which no one gives a shit about.
It's a bit like
what that is.
Yeah. A bit like this. Well, look, what else? Well, look, I watched, we're going to have to go in a sec.
Are you joking?
No, it's gone very fast.
Oh, come on, man. We haven't even started yet.
We'll do a little bit longer.
Who's on next?
Sophia Spexter the next week. You have to wait another week to see.
Oh.
I've watched Live In It on Amazon Prime. It's there on Amazon Prime if anyone wants to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a few specials, but they're here and there about, but that's at Amazon Prime. That's pretty good to
get. Yeah, most
Amazon
of it have been banned.
Yeah.
What's Happening White People was the Universal and PC's World, which I actually performed on this very stage.
Right.
Also very hard to find.
Right.
Then Live In It on Amazon Prime globally, but banned in certain countries.
Right.
But it's available in the UK. So watch it until it gets banned.
Yeah. But you could put all the, presumably you could put these, or maybe you don't own the rights to them, but you could put them, a lot of comics are just putting them out on their websites for free now as a sort of advert for their other work.
I should try and do that.
I think it's a good idea.
We should talk about that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk. I can't help you, but hey, we can. That's it. That's all it is. Do that. And it's done.
You're just trying to help me with my career.
Yeah, no, I'd like to help your career. I can tell you how to sell out Wembley. It'll be fine. there's a couple of things with crime. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but you've had a couple of associations with Crime Watch.
Oh, yeah, that was in the last show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got... Yeah, didn't we speak about...
We might have talked... Well, we might have talked about... So you had like offered to act in as a terrorist, as one of the bombers, the 7-7 bombers.
That was years ago. Yeah, 2007.
Yeah.
7-7. So yeah. I was at the Edinburgh Festival doing the Caves. And that show was about that. It was about that incident when I got called from Crime Watch saying that they're doing a reconstruction of the 7-7 bombings and I resembled one of the bombers.
Nice.
So could you be in the reconstruction?
Yeah.
And I said, people mistake EastEnders characters for real people. What the fuck are they going to do to me?
True. And surely, I mean, you know, with the best will in the world, they weren't going to catch that guy.
Well, they all died in the bombing.
Yeah, they all blew themselves up.
But then, unfortunately, people do believe in reincarnation.
Okay, so yes, we've got to get
They would have probably come for me, you know. It is that geezer, mate. I saw him on... I'm not saying that he would have been with that accent.
Oh, right. That's that individual. Let's beat him up.
And then you looked like someone else in a Crime Watch. That's what your recent show is.
In the last show.
Yeah.
I basically looked like a terrorist.
Yeah, I mean, that's the... I mean, I don't think you do, but I think people have a perception.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. It's the nicest thing you said to me.
That's all right.
You don't look like a terrorist.
I mean, I think you look like a sort of a proprietor of a Victorian circus or something, is what I would say.
Back in the day, this would be a circus, me and you on... This place probably was a circus back in the day. And imagine me and you on stage in the 1800s.
Yeah.
What would it have been? You with this weird moustache and this Indian guy sat next to you on stage and a bunch of white people staring at us. What show would this have been?
People would pay for anything back in the 19th century.
This would have been some kind of weird auction.
Which of us would be sold being first. Sold off?
You look tastier.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, this is, I think I do a few acting jobs, but I usually get to play a pervert or some kind. But I think if there are any, you know, if there are any acting people watching, this is, you know, this is what you would get.
You get this playing mustache. As a pervert?
I end up getting people who, like, I get people who are visiting prostitutes a lot. I get people, and I've never employed a sex worker in my life.
Why not? No,
just because I...
You can't say a prostitute I've anymore.
Had, I know, I said sex worker, but I said the character is someone who goes to prostitutes.
You got to say hooker.
Yeah, the hookers.
Hooker.
And people who wank in bushes on, that was Taskmaster. And I did a short film where I was a man who cut off his own genitals, which is that's it? Come back to haunt me.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, I must play sort of sleazy men a lot.
But you were a notorious swordsman back
that's
in the day.
That's what you keep saying. But yeah, I'm a very attractive man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. No, I am.
Oh, sorry. That's...
You're all right.
But what was it like back in the day with Peter Stringfellow was known.
Yeah.
But you were the amount of women that you were, and yeah. Some young boys that you went through. How did you do it?
Yeah, because I'm a very nice person.
So you kind of manipulated your way. Isn't it?
I tell you, if you want my suggestion to anyone who wants to be a slag, which is, I believe, what I was.
You can't use that term anymore.
You can if you use it about yourself. Is to be honest
it's
about
slag.
Is to be honest about what your intentions are, and I found honesty was a fantastic thing because I think most people just lie, and so as long as you're honest and say this is what's going on, I think, and then everyone.
Because I'm well out of practice.
Yeah. So. No, you're not. Not nothing going on. You're not a married man.
No, I mean just I'm basically androgynous.
Right. That's.
I'm asexual.
Yeah. I don't know. Androgynous means you're like a man, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. So you are androgynous.
No.
I mean, I quite like it. I'm like a man, but I'm not a man. That is...
I'm a straight androgynous man.
Okay.
Cisgender.
Yeah.
Cis male.
Yeah.
But, I love women.
Yeah.
But I just haven't been around one for a long time.
That's a shame.
How come?
Well, it'd be nice for you to have, if you like women, it'd be nice for you to be around one.
I've walked past a few.
Yeah, no. That's, and I'm sure you've sniffed the air as you pass.
No, I don't sniff them.
You just have to, talk to people, Paul, and see how it goes.
Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
But then they're going to go, aren't you the terrorist from the 7-7?
They do. They go, are you that pervert who cut off his own genitals? That is. And then they go, oh, I'm interested in this.
After this show, I might talk to the bearded woman in the front row.
I mean, Lou will be well up for it. That's all I can say. Vote for approval from Lou, who does not have a beard. I should say, Lou, just in case people take that seriously. It was a kind of a joke. You're an interesting man, Paul.
Is it?
Yeah.
How come?
Because it's...
I've never really seen myself like that.
It's hard to penetrate who's...
No, don't penetrate.
I don't want to penetrate. Because, there's half of you is this very silly, rude man, and you're this very thoughtful person as well, and then there's this, little, crust of... Crust, is that the right word? Yeah, let's say
pizza
crust.
Crust.
Crust of loneliness and sorrow within you.
Yeah,
a little crust. I want to say a little kernel, maybe. Is it?
I'm like Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
I'm a recluse.
Yeah.
The only time I go out is to do shows or the Richard Herring podcast.
Yeah. But that's true of a lot. But I'm like that.
You're a socialite.
I'm not very. I don't really. I'm not sociable. I don't really. And I never really like going out. And I stayed in a lot.
Yeah, but you've got a woman at home, so it's.
I've got now. I was staying, but before I had a family, I was in at home. More than I was going out.
Really?
I was very shy and I felt quite awkward in most social situations.
Yeah, because shyness as an adult comes across as arrogance.
Yeah, it can
so
do.
So when you're shy as a child and unfortunately when it follows you into adulthood, you're just seen as an arrogant man.
Yeah.
Because people don't see shyness in an adult. is, you know, so...
Well, I think with someone like you, they wouldn't. So they wouldn't... You seem brash and confident and yet, but I think there's a vulnerability, you know, and I think that's what makes you work as a comedian as well, which is good, but I would like you to work, you know, have a happy life as well as being a good comedian. But there's a vulnerability to you beneath the... there's a swagger on stage and there's a confidence on stage that nobody is like that in real life. So the Paul Chowdhury on stage is not the real you. The Paul Chowdhury we're seeing tonight is not the same as the Paul Chowdhury from the specials, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's people come up to you and say, "Oh, you're not as funny off stage, are you?" Like, literally, if you were like that off stage, you'd probably get arrested.
Yeah, well, you definitely would get arrested.
As I say, stage performing is for stage performing, and people have come out for a good night out. And if you were a shy man on stage, there's the problem. But it's weird how we are so shy off stage, some of us, and on stage... We become our true selves to a certain degree.
Yeah. I mean, sort of, I feel that, and some people have said, Lou Sanders said it about me, because I think when she's my wife's friend, she sort of, and I've worked with her a lot, but she sees me off stage and on stage, and I think she thinks I'm quite a dull old man off stage. Mm. But then she says, when he comes on stage, he just comes alive, and he's, so there is an element of that where, you know, it's an amazing thing, and I think there is something odd about comedians. And it's often, you know, Robin Ince goes on about this a lot, and I know you lost your mum when you were very young, and so it's often something has happened in the past that I think maybe affects comics.
But. Yeah, I mean, Jerry Seinfeld says we're the only person facing the wrong way in a room.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic of why we have to make a room full of strangers laugh.
Yeah.
We're always trying to gain some acceptance from people. And tonight I've tried to make this audience laugh pretending I'm Nick Mohammed.
Whatever it takes.
But the biggest... that's why I took this gig tonight. I like a challenge.
Yeah. You
know, comedy is all about a challenge. And, you know, you put any crowd in front of me, I'll die on my ass. But no, I'll try to...
But you will, you know, it's a comedian's instinct. Comedians are different sort of people. You are still doing your tour. Your current tour show is still... You've got a few more dates in 2023, right? So there's a few people can come and see the show.
You've got a few more dates and potential extensions.
Yeah.
I've been touring this for about a long time now. Yeah. Stop and start. So, but yeah, it's very family friendly.
Yeah.
But it says no children.
Yeah.
So... you're welcome to come along.
Okay.
And I do birthdays, weddings, bar mitzvahs. Okay. If you want to book me, if anyone out there is listening or in the audience want to book me, I'm available for those types of things.
Okay.
So I did one recently, actually.
Yeah.
Did a birthday party, 40th birthday party last week.
Right.
It's really good.
Yeah. I saw you talking about doing a gig in someone's house.
Oh, I've done, do gigs in people's houses, bedrooms, toilets. Well, that birthday party was a weird one because you get information about the person, whoever you're talking about, and I talked about this guy, he was very rich, 40-year-old, and I said, just a throwaway, you must be a drug dealer, which is just a throwaway line, and his dad said, tell everybody you're joking. And then his other son said, can you tell everyone you're joking? And I had to make it clear that he wasn't a drug dealer. It was a joke. And he put his children and his parents right in front of me at the performance. You know, I've been attacked on these stages.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We'd be the last person I would get into my house in front of my family. Here's a nice surprise for you. This guy is just going to be saying horrible things to you.
But I am available.
Yeah, you are available to do that.
So if you want me to come around to your house...
I will. I'll book you.
Yeah.
I'll book you to come.
We're with the same agent, so
that's all right.
We gave you a good deal on
we
that one.
We can sort it out. Look, it's really lovely to see you. Thanks so much for coming.
It was an honour and a privilege, and it's always good helping you out when people don't make it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Paul Chowdhury! You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Paul Chowdhury. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing the music. I'm in debt to my producer, Ben Walker, and to Chris Evans about that one, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. Thank you to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre for having us. You are fabulous. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Also, thank you to Kathleen McKeegan for her fantastic research website, Rahalastapa, Rahalastapa.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Last one in the series next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.